Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to begin Rus Perek Aleph, the first chapter of the book of Ruth. This is the first of four chapters, and our Perek has 22 psukim, and we're going to look at it in three sections. The first five psukim constitute the first section, and the topic is leaving Israel. We're told it's the time of Shvoit HaShoftim, the judges, and there is a famine in the land of Israel. There's a family who lives Bethlehem, Beis Lechem, for Stei Moav, and the name of the family is, we have Elimelech, who's the father. The mother is Naomi, and the two children are called Mahlon and Kilion. These are terms of destruction, so the Gemara debates is if these are their real names or they're named for what actually happens to them. They spend a little bit of time in the Stei Moav, and Elimelech dies there, and Naomi remains with her two sons, and they each in turn take wives themselves who are Moaviyot. They intermarry into the Moabite land, one marrying Orpah and one marrying Rus, and after 10 years, ultimately, Mahlon and Kilion die, leaving behind only Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. The narrative, this part of the narrative before going further, is more of an intro to the Sefer, and we see this in a few ways. Number one is that there's no dialogue. This is not a drama that, as the rest of the Sefer is. This is simply a description. And also, this section of five psukim actually takes 10 years in duration, whereas the rest of the Sefer takes days and months, except for the last little epilogue about the generations. So it's clearly, so to speak, you know, getting us into space, into the right place, and then the dialogue's about to open, which is the continuation. Rav Yehoshua Bachrach points out in his commentary on the Megillah that Naomi does not have an active role in this. She is given a name, but she's the woman. She's the one who is the mother who's the wife left widowed and the mother who's left bereft. In a certain sense, you could imagine that she perhaps had misgivings or she had suggestions about their move from the land of Israel or their marriage of a Moabite woman, but perhaps she wasn't listened and she's left holding that bag. She's seen as the passive person, the passive victim of this circumstance. We enter the second section of this perek, and that runs from Sukkim Vav to Yud Ches, the main part of this perek. In this section, now Naomi decides to get up. She goes with her daughters-in-law after hearing that there has been food, that the famine has ended in the land of Israel. She starts moving backwards, westwards, to Beis Lechem. And it is, as she goes out, she walks with her daughters-in-law, she turns to her daughters-in-law and says, you know what, you really shouldn't be coming with me. Because, you know, even if I were to have a child and you were to perform some sort of pseudo-yibom experience, it would be, you would be broken, you would be lost or anchored down by this experience. Don't wait for me, return. And she begs them. And in fact, ultimately, Orpah, the one daughter-in-law, does return. She kisses her and returns, and Rus continues with her, and she tries again to beg Rus not to stay with her, and ultimately, in the end of the day, Rus does turn to her and says the famous words. She says, "Don't force me to return. Kiel asher tel chielech, wherever you go, I will go. Asher tolini yolin, wherever you sleep, I will sleep. Ameich ami, your people's my people." And Elokaiach Elokai, your God is my God, Bashir Tamus Yamus, where you will die, I will die, Vishome Kover, and I will be buried there. And so Hashem should do for me, that death should separate us. That's the only thing that can separate us. And so she continued to go, and Naomi continues to allow her. Just a point to notice in the speech over here, that in the speech that Naomi gives to Rus and Rus's return speech, we learn a lot of the halachas of Geirus, as Rashi takes extensive time to point out. The Balbim actually notices that she is acknowledging in her speech the three points: the existence of God, the Torah, Yisrael, and the Minhagim, that's Bashir Telchi Eilech, and the idea of the existence of the Neshama, of Schar V'Onesh, Bashir Tamus Yamus. These, in a certain sense, are the three underlining Ikari Emunah, which are expanded by the Rambam into the 13 principles of faith that are clearly articulated in Rus's speech to her mother-in-law as she protests. And finally, the third and last section of this is when they return. In fact, from Sukkim Yud Tes to Chof Beis, they return to Beis Lechem. They come in, and everybody's out there. Whether there's something else going on, whether it's the funeral of Boaz's wife, or they just notice the newcomers coming in, and they gather around them, and they say, "Zois Naomi. Naomi looks unrecognizable. She was a noble woman now." They look at her and they say, "Is this really the Naomi that we knew?" And she turns to them and she says, very bitterly, almost as a kinna, a lamentation, she says, don't call me Naomi. Call me Marat. Change my name into bitterness because Hashem has been bitter to me. I left full. I returned empty. Don't call me Naomi. And they left standing there, ultimately, so you can understand that there was a silence after that speech. They were left standing alone in the city, and they have to find their own way. We're told at the beginning of the barley harvest. It's worthwhile noticing that the time frame and the space frame in this Megillah are all agricultural, or grain harvest. So we move from the two locations are Beis Lechem, the house of bread, and the Stei Moav, or the fields of Moav. And there's been a return from the fields to the house of making the bread, which seems to be a development. And there's also the time frame of Ketzir Sa'arim, the barley harvest, the earliest of the harvest around the time of Pesach, which is when this is occurring. We're just a few points to ponder, three very fascinating points to consider when looking at this perek. Number one is, what was so grave about them being punished? Why did Elimelech die? Why did the children die? So the one reason that's given over here, the Gemara in Basra said, tells us, the Rambam substantiates this approach, is that they left the land of Israel. This is not the time to leave the land of Israel. There's a price for considering leaving the land of Israel, and this is a problem. The concern of this is that Avraham Avinu also left the land of Israel for a famine, and he was commanded by God to do so in Parshas Lech Lecha. So why is that such a concern? Another concern might be is that the Malbim says it wasn't their leaving, it was their remaining. Meaning to say, yes, it's all fine to leave because of a need, but they decided, Vayeshusham, they decided to stay there. Another aspect of it is that, in fact, they were Poresh Minatzibur. They left the community itself. That means to say that, ultimately, they could have been better. And to attach to this, the Gemara actually quotes Rav Yehoshua ben Korcho and Baba Basra Daf Tzadi Aleph, that they were punished for not seeking rachamim for others. They could have been the ones to help others. They could have been the ones to give the strength to others, and yet they ultimately decided to make their own way, and thereby creating helplessness in the way they treated other people. There are other Mefarshim who say that it was not just leaving, but avera gareres avera, one thing leads to the next, and leaving the Jewish society, national society, leads for a person to be to involve themselves in another society. And what should not be lost upon us is the fact that they leave a place where they could help. They were rich. They leave a place where they could help, and they leave to a place which has tzarus ayin, which has the, so to speak, the smallness of eye and heart, where people are not willing to give, as the Moabites are not willing to help us, the nation of Israel in the desert. Similarly, we see such an example. They leave to such a place, which is ultimately an indictment on their natural mercy that they should have had. Another point to ponder in this perek is, why did she allow them to come and then turn them around? Meaning to say, first Naomi seems to allow them to walk with her, then she turns them around. So it could be, as the Malbim points out, that she thought they were just escorting her at the beginning, and then she realizes, no, wait a second, now the escort is done, now she can turn them around. It's interesting that perhaps maybe psychologically, the further she walks, the more she realizes, says Rav Bachrach, the damaged image that she will be returning with, and also the financial damage that she's going to be returning with. She's impoverished, and she does not want to put her daughters-in-law through this kind of experience. Another question to think about over here is, how do we understand Orpah? Orpah returns. Is she bad? Is she good? Is she neutral? I'd like to just quote a very beautiful paragraph from Cynthia Ozick, who a Jewish-American writer, who writes about Orpah. A very, very powerful, very emotive description. Here's the quotation. Her prototype abounds. She has fine impulses, but she is not an iconoclast. She can push against convention to a generous degree, but is out of generosity of her temperament, not out of some large metaphysical idea. She is certainly not a philosopher, but neither is she, after 10 years with Naomi, an ordinary Moabite. Not that she has altogether absorbed the Jewish vision, the Hebrew vision. She is somewhere in the between. In this, we may suppose her to be one of us, a modern, no longer a full-fledged member of the pagan world, but also with one foot warming in the seductive bath of those colorful, comfortable, often beautiful old lies, not yet given over to the covenant and its determination to train us away from lies, however warm, colorful, beautiful, consoling lies. So Orpah goes home. or more to the point, she goes nowhere. She is never to be blamed for it. If she is not extraordinary, she is also normal. It is not the fault of the normal that it does not or cannot aspire to the extraordinary. What Orpah gains from staying home with her own people is what she always deserved, family happiness. She is young and fertile. Soon she'll be marry a Moabite husband and leave a Moabite child. What Orpah loses is 300 years of history. Israel continues. Moab has not. Still, for Orpah, it may not be a loss at all. Orpah has her husband, her cradle, her little time. She once loved her oddly fair foreign other-in-law. And why shouldn't open-hearted Orpah in her little time also love her Moabite mother-in-law, who is like her very own mother, and who will call her daughter? Normality is not visionary. Normality's appetite stops at satisfaction. This is Rus in Reading Rus by Cynthia Ozick. Worthwhile thinking about this paradigm of Orpah. The Midrash seems to take a more strident approach. The Midrash is very clear that ultimately she begets some very complicated characters as she returns, and that there's no neutrality, there's no fence sitting. It's either considered positive or negative, and she's considered negative. I would also like to just conclude our podcast today just by thinking about the following, and that there is a very beautiful essay by Rav Amnon Bozak, contrasting and comparing the book of Eov and the book of Rus. Why? Particularly because this last little section of Naomi's speech is very similar to some of the speeches that you hear from Eov, a person who is challenged by their circumstances, challenged by the unfit situation they feel themselves in, and tortured by God. However, the interesting thing to note is that ultimately the resolution for both Naomi and for Eov is through proactive actions rather than ruminating on philosophy. As long as Eov remains on his philosopher's stone, thinking and ruminating and brooding, he finds no way out. However, once he's willing to pray for his friends, that is his resolution, says Rav Soloveitchik in Kol Dodi Dofek. Similarly with Naomi, this is a book not of philosophy, not of theology necessarily, but a book of action and chesed. And that's ultimately the way out. Not why, but what. What can we do about the situation, which is the resolution that Naomi finds? In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.